and welcome to the Reorg Europe podcast, your weekly roundup of the most interesting trends and developments in performing credit, stressed and distressed, restructuring and post-reorg in the European and CEMEA markets. It's Tuesday, March 12th, and I'm Andrew Ross. Coming up this week, we are going to discuss why investors are circling the care home sector after a challenging 2023 for operators. Then we will run through the main highlights from the primary market this past week. But first, we're going to delve into the latest developments in Egypt's sovereign credit. I'm now joined by CEMEA reporter Katie McMahon. Hi, Katie. There have been some major developments in Egypt since the last time you joined us to discuss the sovereign credit a couple of weeks back. Could you take us through the latest?
Thanks, Andrew. So the last time I joined you on the podcast, we went through the potted history of the economic crisis Egypt has been facing, really since the war broke out in Ukraine back in 2022. We spoke about the country's massive debt burden that's eating up around two-thirds of the government's annual budget. We touched on the hard currency shortage and how exchange rates for dollars on the black market or the parallel market have become untethered from the official rates. And we talked about how that weakness in the Egyptian pound had blocked imports, fueled inflation, and led to really increased government spending. And you'll remember that most of the people we'd spoken to who were watching the situation were anticipating a major move on the currency front, meaning a real devaluation of the Egyptian pound. And that is exactly what we saw last week. On Wednesday morning, the central bank announced that it would allow the market to determine the exchange rate of the local currency. And we immediately saw those words put into action. So within a couple hours, the official price of the dollar went from just under 31 Egyptian pounds all the way to over 50 Egyptian pounds. So that's more than a 35% devaluation. Now, what people perhaps weren't expecting was that the central bank also moved on Wednesday morning ahead of that devaluation and made a surprise rate hike. So they've upped interest rates by a really quite significant 600 basis points, and that's brought the key rate to 27.25%.
Okay, wow. So some big moves on the monetary policy side from the central bank. What have they done? Why have they done this? And what has been the immediate impact?
Yeah, so one key aim of the devaluation is to eliminate that black market or parallel market for dollars. The black market rate's been consistently far higher than the official rate. It reached as high as £70 to the dollar at one point, compared to 31, the official rate. And that spurred inflation 30% and above, which has really put a lot of pressure on Egyptian households. So the hope is that by devaluing the pound, first of all, you can unify the economy around one official rate and thereby fight inflation. And the central bank governor, Hassan Abdullah, he's really emphasized in the wake of this float last week that the target is not for a specific exchange rate, it's to bring inflation down, and they want to bring that down into the single digits. We also know that the IMF has long been pushing Egyptian authorities to unpeg the foreign exchange rate. And the fund had hinted that by allowing more flexibility in the exchange rate, that that would be really crucial to their signing off on an upsized loan package to Egypt. And it was only a few hours after the float on Wednesday that the IMF and Egypt's Prime Minister Mustafa Madbouly came together in a joint press conference and announced an $8 billion loan package for Egypt. So that's $5 billion more than it was when it was announced back in December 2022. And there's also the possibility that another $1 to $1.2 billion will be coming in climate finance that could top that up, as well as more loans from the World Bank and the EU. So those external funds are going to be really key to helping Cairo plug its funding gap. And those have really been unlocked in some sense by this devaluation.
Okay. I guess many of our listeners will be wondering what all this means for Cairo's debt stack. How have these moves changed the picture for investors in Egyptian sovereign credit?
Absolutely, yeah. So first up, looking at the Eurobonds, which we touched on a little bit last time, yields had already been trending down on the Eurobonds in recent months. We spoke about some of the reasons for that. The key one really being that given the war in Gaza, Egypt has increasingly been viewed as too strategically important for its allies to allow the economic situation to deteriorate further. So the Eurobonds had also been boosted by that $35 billion investment deal Cairo made with the UAE in recent weeks. That's to develop the Ras El Hekma Peninsula on the north coast into a tourism destination. And that was really seen as further proof that allies are coming to Cairo's aid. So perhaps unsurprisingly, after what happened on Wednesday, sentiment on the Eurobonds has only improved. We saw a really broad-based rally on the Wednesday in the secondary market. Eurobonds rose in price across the curve, jumping most on the longest dated bonds. And that's pushed yields on all of Cairo's Eurobonds to below 11%. And that is quite the change when you consider that some of these bonds were yielding in the 20s throughout 2022, much of 2023. There's also been some pretty interesting developments in the local debt, the Egyptian pound denominated treasury bills and bonds. So the central bank came to market with fresh T-bills the day after its rate hike and the devaluation. It came back again on Sunday with more. In total, on the Thursday and the Sunday, it sold the equivalent of around $4.5 billion in Egyptian pound denominated T-bills. Now, the yield on those instruments is higher than 30%, and that is a point at which they start to become really attractive to foreign investors. The issuances were several times oversubscribed. We've heard there was significant participation from foreign investors, and that will be really welcome news for the Egyptian authorities. They have been struggling really to entice foreign investors back into their local debt since the Ukraine-Russia war began. And at that point, we'd seen about $20 billion of this hot money flee the Egyptian market thanks to the war. So we're seeing what could be the start of a return of that hot money and those foreign investors into the local debt.
Okay, so it sounds like investors have received all this news quite positively.
It definitely feels from the conversations we're having that this has gone a long way to shift sentiment among investors. So where the Eurobonds had been trading up even before the devaluation, that was really based on the belief that Egypt would muddle through no matter how bad things get. Now I think there is more of a cautious optimism. So we see the bonds trading up on increased confidence in the country's ability to navigate this crisis and commit to lasting monetary and fiscal reform. So the devaluation's been key to that shift in sentiment. That said, only time will tell. Investors, and that includes the IMF, really want to see this float sustained without a return to central bank intervention in the exchange rate. They'll also want to see the government stick to its pledges on fiscal discipline and spending. And in the longer term, countries like the UAE, who have poured billions into Egypt, will want to see those projects driving growth and ultimately offering them a good return on their investment.
2023 has been a challenging year for care home operators across Europe. The sector drove investors' and advisors' attention following recent restructurings and a sizable maturity wall in 2026. Joining me to discuss is credit analyst Manuel Coel. Why has 2023 been a difficult year, and have we reached the bottom?
Hi, Andrew. Yes, so 2023 marked the end of COVID government subsidies, and together with low occupancy rates, staff shortage, high labor and energy costs, we observed a general reduction in the care homes operators' margins. Remember that prices are regulated and price adjustments are limited in the case of existing customers, which makes it difficult for the operators to pass through costs of inflation to customers. In Germany, for example, there was a significant wage increase, and Clarion said that it had to negotiate compensation locally with care insurers. Also, there was an increase in the requirements for nurses to get a diploma, which created the bottleneck for recruiting nurses. The combination of these factors generated pressure to renegotiate the pricing scheme for each and every care and resulted in delays in the offset of various costs. That said, we have seen some credit positives, such as increases in occupancy rates and inflation easing. Clarion itself said its margins have reached the bottom. There is a clear need for private operators, as there is a lot of funding pressure on local and national governments, and the population is aging. So 2024 is expected to be a better year.
So why are people concerned about the sector and ability to refinance?
So in our analysis, we focused on the main French players, Orpea, Clarion and Domus V, and the German peers, such as Median, BV and GHD, and UK-based Voyage Care. The short answer to your question is that these players are highly levered and showed minimal cash generation and organic deleveraging. It is hard to have clear visibility in the next 12 months due to the persistent shortage of staff and the ongoing tariff negotiations, which sometimes take longer than planned. We estimate that these credits have in aggregate about 4 billion of debt maturing in 2026 and 6 billion in 2027. At least the absence of a near-term maturity will provide some breathing space for them to recover their credit metrics. Some names also embarked on real estate monetization to raise cash and repay debt.
Right, there is uncertainty on their ability to material delever on time. So, are any borrowers that stand out?
Well, Orpea is not doing very well. It just concluded its restructuring, and last month it said it expects EBITDA for 2023 to be about 200 million, off of what it had presented in its original business plan alongside the restructuring plan. It also has ambitious asset sale plan, and to date, it does not seem to made a huge progress on it. Clariane's refinancing and asset sale plan seems to be proceeding smoothly. However, the plan provides a two-year liquidity runway, but it does not address the 1.3 billion maturity wall in 2026. We think the company needs to materially streamline its capital structure to be able to refinance. People we spoke to have expressed mixed views on Clariane. Moreover, we are more positive on names such as Median and Voyage Care instead. And finally, to conclude, I would add that all these sale and leaseback transactions companies are doing provide minimal benefit to cash generation, as the cash savings is limited to the spread between the interests on the debt that is redeemed and rates on the new leases. So this results in high fixed charges, and the addition of lease liabilities to the balance sheet does not alleviate credit ratings pressure.
We are now joined by Leverage Finance reporter Beatrice Mervolian. Hi Beatrice, can you take us through some of the key highlights from the primary market this past week?
So this week, Heathrow priced an upsized 400 million sterling of notes for general corporate purposes. UK film and TV studio Pinewood is marketing 500 million sterling of notes for refinancing. Car manufacturer Aston Martin is also marketing the notes for which it had its initial roadshow last week. And debt recovery company Encore Capital has just started marketing some notes for repaying drawings under its RCF. There are also loans in the market from a number of issuers, with most of the proceeds expected to be used for refinancing or debt repayment. German HR and payroll platform Personal and Informatic is marketing a loan for refinancing and a dividend. It is one of a number of credits that have come to the primary syndicated market recently to refinance private debt or debt that was raised partly from private debt markets. And this has become quite a strong trend. We've seen it on a number of deals recently. Overall, although the secondary market has softened slightly from its peaks in January and February, pricing remains fairly tight in the primary market, although generally wider than Euribor plus 400. At some point, there were deals that were testing the E plus 375 level, but that's unusual now. A number of new CLOs have been printed supporting demand. And there's also a handful of early birds in the market, which suggests that activity will be healthy before Easter.
Download REORG's EMEA Primary Market 2023 Full Year Wrap through the link provided in the podcast description. More information on all the situations and events discussed in this podcast are available on our website, reorg.com. We hope you can join us next week for another REORG Europe podcast. Until then, have a great week and thank you very much for listening.